Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome again to another show. You are now on Painted Green. I'm your host, Tony Smith. This is episode 8, and the name of today's show is Natural Law, the Constitution, and the Duopoly. And actually, withdrawing your consent from the duopoly. Haven't did a show for about a couple weeks. Want to thank everybody for listening in via YouTube, via Periscope, via Ustream, via Twitch. I want to thank everybody listening in via Blog Talk, via Pal Talk, via Podbeam, and all of our social media network sites. Want to thank everybody for listening in. Okay, so we're going to get right into it. Today's show is basically the reason why I'm doing this is because a lot of people are like, oh, let's, you know, you have to withdraw yourself from voting. Voting means nothing, blah, blah, blah. But voting is the right. It is a natural law. You know what I'm saying? Because that is how people got stuff done. The bankers are the ones who subverted true natural law. And they subverted it with their own law through their corporation that they created in Washington in 1913. So that's ultimately the situation. Now, we want you to politically align with the Green Party is because people are tribal. And if as long as there are Republicans and Democrats around, the people need a party to associate with so that they know who they are. I mean, we can all come together and say, yeah, I'm Tony Smith. Yeah, you know, listening audience. But, you know, people identify themselves as their nation, their ethnicity, their political ideology, political affiliation, and schooling and friends. You know what I'm saying? That's how people identify themselves. You understand? And through political parties is how we identify ourselves. Admit it or not, you can say, oh, yeah, we should withdraw from the whole damn thing. But why? Ask yourself this question. Why the hell do they control both parties if voting don't matter? And how the hell did Donald Trump become president if Hillary Clinton was the favorite? The lesser of two evils, if there is such a thing, is actually because in the whole thing is the bankers. So the bankers started the Civil War through the Democrat Party, which they've controlled since then. They started the Civil War, and the Republicans was created because of the one-party system that the Democrats had created. And the Democrats wanted to maintain slavery, maintain the status quo, which they do today. They haven't changed, brothers and sisters. What they have been able to do is manipulate us to think that they done did something over the past, since 1945. Granted, FDR did do something, but he was saving capitalism. He didn't give a shit about the people. He said, we got to give them something. We're working them 80 hours and kids and all of that. We got to give them an 8-hour work day so they can go home and be happy, you know, and you know, football, basketball, baseball, circus, you know. So that's what it was. And people and from 45 to the 60s, it was blissful for, like, it was a bubble. It wasn't actually blissful. It was just, it was the product of a false reality that was created, is what the 50s and early 60s. In the mid-60s, the boomers, the reality of things, and as they've gotten older, they've just lost their damn minds. So here's what I want to do. I'm gonna read you these definitions, so that we're clear. Because first we're going to look at Roman law, okay? And that, okay, this country was created because everybody was running from the Pope. That is a fact. That's why this country is here. Everybody was running from the Pope. So Roman law is a legal system of ancient Rome, including legal development spanning over 1,000 years of jurisprudence, which is what they call today precedent. From the 12 tables in 449 BC to Corpus Juris Civilis AD 529, ordered by Eastern Roman Emperor Justiniana the First, Roman law forms the basic framework for civil law. The most widely used legal system today, and the terms are sometimes used synonymously. The historical importance of Roman law is reflective by the continued use of Latin legal terminology in many legal systems influenced by it, including common law. The dissolution of the Western Roman Empire, the Roman law remained in effect in the Eastern Roman Empire. From the 7th century onward, the legal language in the East was Greek. So now it's English. Roman law also denoted the legal system applied in most of Western Europe until the end of the 18th century. In Germany, Roman law practice remained in place longer under the Holy Roman Empire, and the Holy Roman Empire fell in 1806. So the Holy Roman Empire was still around for a long time, brothers and sisters. It's 1806. This ain't ancient 476 AD. The Pope ruled the world in 1806, brothers and sisters. Roman law thus served as a basis for legal practice throughout Western continental Europe, as well as in most former colonies of these European, Latin America, and also Ethiopia, and English and Anglo-American common law were influenced also by Roman law, notably in their legal glossaries. So Roman law is these 12 tables from 54 BC to 449 BC. It is a private law comprised of Roman civil law. So basically what you have in Washington is the same thing, which is why there are two constitutions, which is why the CIA can exist. The CIA couldn't exist under the constitution that the Freemasons set up because of the Articles of Confederation, which is a word that we're going to get into in a minute. But I want you to understand everybody was running from Roman law because the Pope was infallible. So he could change the law just talking to you. People were running from that. Stock markets can't survive when one man rules. You know what I'm saying? This is why these people ran. Now, listen. Let's look up natural law now. So everybody ran to America, the Jews, Europeans, German, everybody, right? Okay, but this is what they established through the Constitution, which the Freemasons established through the Constitution, because when the initial government was the Continental Congress, which oversaw the American Revolution, right? So natural law is a philosophy asserting that certain rights are inherent by virtue of human nature. Is that what the UN is putting off as called human rights, human nature? Endowed by nature, and the Green Party is the political vehicle for this natural law to be in place because it's already in place through the Constitution. If you even just read this first part, it's a philosophy asserting that certain rights are by virtue of human. Now, what do we hear that at? Do we not hear that in the Constitution? These certain that. Yeah. The Constitution is an agreement of all of these states who couldn't agree under the Articles of Confederation to exercise natural law through the Constitution, which was the agreement. It's oversaw because they were looked upon as the enlightened ones. So there were presidents before under the Articles of Confederation. And we can get into a study in that alone, but this is just an overview just to give you an understanding of what the Green Party, because people are so caught up in the aspects, like you're running from Roman law. This is what you're running from. And you have to understand that's what you're running from. You do not want one man infallible entire world, right? Law is individuals' rights, which are an issue of human nature endowed by, which is why we have to become one with nature. And get rid of fossil fuels and that sort of thing. And localize everything. because nature is not local in your community. So, natural law is the philosophy asserting that certain rights are inherent by virtue of God by nature, traditionally by God or a transcendent source or something greater than ourselves, which is what the Constitution was. And evolve together and say, yeah, we're going to do this. But then the banker said, we're going to subvert this and manipulate it. So you think that it's still going on, but it's not, which is why the Ripparty was created in 1856. They understood the Jesuits are trying to take over the country. So, I know this is a lot, but it's the reality of the situation. You understand? Because people are like, don't mess with the political parties. As soon as you are able to control somebody from being tribal, let me know. I've been in this world for a minute, and guess what? People gang bang. Period. So, we got a Green Party that wants the 10 principles of the Green Party fits natural law. This is why there is so much opposition to the Green Party, because the Green Party is the puzzle piece to free us politically. Because once you have a brand that the people can go to and say, hey, unions will, you know, business, small business, I mean, all the power in their banking system will cease to exist because everything will be local, which is it's supposed to be anyway. And the federal government is always supposed to get permission from the state. That's not how it is, because we're under another constitution after 1913. It actually was in 18-something. I can't remember off the top of my head. But they installed another one, which allowed for, you know, the CIA, DEA, FBI. All this stuff is unconstitutional. It is all against natural law. Control is against natural law. And what were we running from? Control, Roman law. So I want to show you what this is my ideology, Tony Smith. So we know what natural law is. So I'm a libertarian socialist. That's my ideology. People are like, oh, these labels. Hey, it's not a label. It's who you are. Quit mobbing yourself up like the Democrats. The Democrats want to divide you by race and by sex and make you a mob. That's what they want. What the Green Party wants to do is give you thought. I am a libertarian socialist, and I am a part of the Green Party politically. On the local level, I am of the Circle City Green Tribe and of the Indiana Tribe Party, the Federation. And so the government, the federal government, has to go local. So guess what? Then we don't have to reach out to the federal government no more. I'm telling you, but this is my ideology. Libertarian socialism. It is a group of anti-authoritarian political philosophies inside the socialist movement that rejects the concept of socialism as centralized state ownership and control of the economy, because we can't have it centralized control. It has to be local. decentralized, which is what the Green Party is, a decentralized party. It's a federation of tribes. So, libertarian socialism rejects the state itself. We don't believe in the state because the state is supposed to rule the federal government. It's close and overlaps with left libertarianism and criticizes wage-labor relationships within the workplace. Of course we do. Instead, we emphasize worker self-management of the workplace. We control it. When the production goes up, our wages go up because we run it through a democracy. Instead of emphasizing worker self-management of the workplace and decentralized structures of political organization. The only reason I'm in the Green Party because it's decentralized and in the 10 principles, you cannot take corporate donations. Other than that, I would not be doing nothing. I wouldn't even be paying attention to politics. I would be eating, drinking, and being merry. That's what I would be doing. It asserts that a society based on freedom and justice can be achieved through abolishing authoritarian institutions like the Federal Reserve that was created in 1913 to enslave us with their debt that controls certain means of production and subordinate the majority to an owning class or a political and economic elite. Libertarian socialists advocate for decentralized structures based on direct democracy and or federal confederal associations such as municipalities, citizen assemblies, trade unions, worker councils. That's what we believe in as libertarian socialists. Of course I support single-payer health care. It is a right. It is the right to life. Of course we need that. Of course, universal child care. Of course, universal education. It's a right. It's liberty. You need to be educated in order to exercise your liberty. Or you're a slave. See how that works, brothers and sisters? It's real simple when we put it into perspective and quit being manipulated. Because they manipulate through our emotions and keep us confused. It gets confusing when you get manipulated. So I want you to listen to this. This is a crash course in the Constitution and the Articles of Confederation. Because you have to understand the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution. And then I'm going to end the show out with just explaining how we can move forward with the Green Party, since we've got a bunch of people out there saying withdraw your consent completely, which all that's going to do is put the power elite more centralized. When you withdraw, the whole thing is oppression, brothers and sisters. The whole thing is oppression. So they not vote. They tell you to go vote. So then they can demoralize you at the voting booth and say your name has been purged. But if you exercise your stop voting booth and be a vigilante voter, they have to count it because you're not consenting to the corporation. You're saying, according to the real Constitution, I am Tony Smith of the state of Indiana, not a U.S. citizen. I'm not a U.S. citizen. I am a citizen of the state of Indiana within the Federation of the United States, just as politically the Federation of the Green Party. It's real simple, brothers and sisters. Okay, so let's take a listen to this now. I want you guys to listen. This is the crash course in the Constitution and the Articles of Confederation. And it's John Green, and he's a little, nerdy guy, but it's real easy and he is pretty upbeat to where it's not boring, you understand? But it gives you just an overview of the whole situation, and then I'll give my final words on it, and then we'll close the show out. I want to thank everybody for listening in via Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, BitChute, Ustream, Daily Motion, everywhere. We've got over 24 social media networking sites that we broadcast from. We're trying to also combine everybody because we have affiliates who also do shows. So shout out to all of our affiliates, Deb Della Piana, Danielle St. John, Furious George, Harsh Meds, Holly Seelinger. Shout out to all you brothers and sisters. We love you dearly. Okay, so here's the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, Crash Course in History. Here we go.
Crash Course U.S. History, and today we're going to talk about the United States Constitution. And in doing so, we're going to explore how the American style of government became the envy of the entire world, so much so that everyone else copied us. What's that, Stan? We're not going to talk about other countries stealing our form of government because no other countries said that. No, Stan, not the libertage. Cue the intro. So today we're going to learn why the green areas of not America didn't copy us. All right, so as Americans may dimly remember from history classes, the constitutional system we've been living under since 1788, the year of the first presidential election, was not the original American government. The first government set up by the Continental Congress was called the Articles of Confederation, and it was, in a word, bad. In two words, it was not good, which is why it only lasted 10 years. The problem with the Confederation is that it wasn't so much a framework for a national government as it was a firm league of friendship, which unfortunately only sounds like a team of Care Bear superheroes. The Articles set up a government that consisted of a one-house body of delegates, with each state having a single vote, who, acting collectively, could make decisions on certain issues that affected all the states. There was no president and no judiciary. You can try to tell me that John Hanson, the president of the Congress, was the first American president, but it's just not true. Any decision required nine of the 13 congressional votes, which pretty much guaranteed that no decisions would ever be made. Ah, supermajorities, always so efficient. But besides the two-thirds requirement, the Congress was very limited in what it could actually do. The government could declare war, conduct foreign affairs, and make treaties. Basically, the stuff you need to do to go to war with England. It could coin money, but it couldn't collect taxes. That was left to the states. So if you needed money to, say, go to war with Britain, you had to ask the states politely. The articles could be amended, but that required a unanimous vote, so zero amendments were ever passed. The government was deliberately weak, which followed logically from Americans' fear of tyrannical governments taxing them and quartering soldiers in their houses and so on. But here's the thing, weak government is like non-alcoholic beer. It's useless. That said, the Articles government did accomplish a couple things. First, it won the war, so yay, unless you were a slave or a Native American, in which case, you know, probable boo. Second, the government developed rules for dealing with one of the most persistent problems facing the new nation, Ohio, which was called the Northwest, presumably because it is Virginia. Getting control of the land meant taking it from the Indians who were living there, and the Articles government was empowered to make treaties, which it did. Crash Course World History fans will remember the Athenians telling the Melians that the strong do as they can and the weak suffer what they must. The Americans definitely went to the Athenian school of treaty making. Treaty signed it from the Ohio River. The biggest accomplishment of the Articles government was the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, which set up a process to create five new states between the Ohio and Mississippi rivers. Two things to know about this. First, it acknowledged that American Indians had a claim to the land and that they had to be treated better if settlers wanted to avoid violence. And second, Stan, can I get the foreshadowing filter? Yes, perfect. The ordinance outlawed slavery in all five of the new states. Still, the Articles government was a complete disaster for exactly one reason. It taxes. Both the national government of debt and their main source of revenue became tariffs, but because Congress couldn't impose them, states had to. And this made international trade a total nightmare, in fact, worsened by the British being kind of cranky about us when we were unwilling to trade. 1687, the problem got up and closed. foreclose the courts to prevent them from foreclosing upon their debt-encumbered farm. This was called Shays' Rebellion after Revolutionary War veteran and indebted farmer Daniel Shays. The uprising was quelled by the state militia, but for many, this was the sign that the Articles government, which couldn't deal with the crisis at all, had to go. But not for everyone. Thomas Jefferson, for instance, was a fan of Shays' Rebellion. A little rebellion now and then is a good thing. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots, which is all fine and good, I mean, unless you're the bleeding patriots or tyrants. But to most elites, Shays' Rebellion showed that too much democratic liberty among the lower classes could threaten private property. Also, people who held government bonds were nervous because without tax revenue, they were unlikely to get paid back. And when rich people feel like something has to be done, something is usually done. Let's go to the thought bubble. The first attempt to do something was a meeting in Annapolis in 1786 aimed at better regulating international trade. Only six states sent delegates, but they agreed to meet the next year in Philadelphia to revise the Articles of Confederation. The delegates who met in Philly the next year had a funny definition of revision, though. Rather than make tweaks to the articles, they wrote a new charter of government, the Constitution, which is, with some significant alterations, the same one that Americans live under and argue about today. Despite what some seem to believe, the 55 men who met in Philadelphia and hammered out a new form of government were not gods, but they were far from ordinary, especially for the time. Most were wealthy, some very much so. More than half had college educations, which was super rare since 0.001% of Americans attended college at the time.
Okay. And that's pretty much it. I mean, he goes into a little more detail, but you see the whole, basically the Articles of the Confederation, it's hard to make moves as it's really not a country. You're a bunch of countries. Keep the Union together. The Freemasons are the ones who drafted the Constitution. So that's what we're under. But the Freemasons at the time were just infiltrated by the Rothschilds. So they still had some good in them when they created the Constitution because it was the agreement of them coming together because they never forgot they ran from Rome. So they agreed to obviously, you know, over time you had tyrants, you had the bankers, you had the Civil War, and all of this stuff happened. Then you had 1913 when the bankers took over the country, the central bank, the Federal Reserve, which centralized the federal government and made the states subservient to the federal government and the corporate constitution in place. When they pass laws, they do S and H. And when you hear about HR or SR, those are the corporate constitution being enacted. So they're making laws based on the corporate constitution. The people give their sovereignty to the state. People who vote and Republican, you give your party is decentralized, so you don't give up sovereignty because there's no centralization. Centralization is the giving up of individual sovereignty. Period, point blank, end of story. There are a lot of debates, this is truth, enlightened one, you to know the actual truth. Not that we are not involved in the truth. But there are more layers to this onion than meets the eye. So that's it for today. Ultimately, what we have to do is locally buy in, withdraw yourself from multinations feeding you and all of that. Keep your dollars low. Political, the Green Party. Through that Green Party is how we will localize the Constitution as it's supposed to be. The states are supposed to control the federal government, not the other way around. And we've let them control us through the bankers and through the Jesuits, which is ultimately the Pope. The Jesuits and all that Confederacy have infiltrated our country, and they run in it. And it's called the deep state and the shadow government under what is called the New World Order. So it is what it is. We got to fight. Got a lot of work to do. So with that, I hope everybody enjoyed the show. I want to thank you for listening in via Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, BitChute, Periscope, Ustream, all of our social media sites, Blog Talk, Pal Talk, Skype, Podbeam. I want to thank all you guys for listening in. Spotify, everybody. I want to thank you. So with that, we'll go ahead and close the show out until we meet again at the appointed time. We'll see you later, everybody. Have a good time.